shooting from the lip.
We're taking no prisoners here.
Real opinions for real people.
John Gaunt, shooting from the lip.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Shooting from the Lip with me, John Gaunt. Dominic Cummings, he is dominating all the headlines, all the news broadcasts. So I want to know what you think about it, but I also want to know what the former Fleet Street editor and now social commentator makes of this, Neil Wallace, who joins us now.
Shooting from the Lip.
Hi, Neil.
Good afternoon.
Tell me what you think of the Dominic Cummings story, please.
One, I think the original trip to Durham, many people will be uncomfortable, is understandable, and if you don't like it, you can live with it. If he genuinely thought that his child, 4 years old, was in danger of being left alone with two deeply sick parents incapable of looking after him, I don't know what else you do. I'd want my child in a place of safety. Where he has great difficulty is this other trip to Barnard Castle. I think that's the really, really hard thing to explain away. Because even if he's telling the truth or not, it's not excusable. And also, you go back to the beginning of the story, him going home to his sick wife, going back to the office before he goes back to take him to Durham, that broke his own rules as well. Now, this is further complicated by the behaviour in the media of this, because the original stories were simply full of inaccuracies and, frankly, untruths, such as the second trip when he was supposed to have gone back to Durham, which was completely untrue, such as the police questioned him about it at the time, completely untrue. Although, of course, police themselves have a huge question to answer here, because, frankly, they put out at the kindest completely inaccurate information about any dealings they had with him.
Okay, so is it a legitimate story, Neil?
Totally, totally. I believe he should survive, and I think he will survive for a time at least. But is it a legitimate story? Of course it is. The way it has been covered, however, I think has raised all sorts of issues. The TV footage outside that media scrum as he was carrying his small child outside his house, I can't begin to imagine the outrage of people watching that. You know, it's all that you can hate him, but really? Small child? That's not right.
Yeah, but hold on a minute. Come on, you must have done your fair share of camping outside celebs' doorways or sending out young journalists to do that. It's a huge story. It looked like he was trying to cover it up. It looks like he was breaking the rules that the rest of us for 8 weeks have had to live under. The man's a stinking hypocrite.
John, you will remember that I actually have been the subject of being a media scrum outside my front door for days at a time during the hacking scandal, when fortunately a jury at the Old Bailey declared me innocent. And I have absolutely no argument that this is a major story, but there are still ways it should be covered. And mobbing a small child is not one of them. Now, one big issue with this is the utter incompetence of the Downing Street press operation. That incident in the press conference in the Rose Garden, that should have been done on Saturday morning at the very latest. They should have done all of that on the Friday night. Now, I don't know whether that's down to Dominic Cummings refusing in his arrogance, in which case, again, he's the architect of his own downfall. But leaving that story hanging in the air there for 48, 72 hours was madness. And while I do think he will continue to survive for some time, I do think it has genuinely damaged Boris Johnson. And Boris Johnson, for the long term, needs to think about this.
Talk to me about these ideas. A lot of people out there believe this is a kind of Romaniacs wreaking their revenge on Dominic Cummings. What do you think?
I think there's an element of that. I think, you know, when you look at the response on Twitter, I'm on Twitter a lot, as you know, you certainly see a lot of divisions upon old Brexit lines. That is an element to the driver on it in parts of the media. However, there's been a poll in the Daily Mail that shows a majority of Conservative voters, a significant majority, think he did wrong and think he should resign. Now, that's cut through. you know, when you get a story like this, the question is, who is it engaging? Is it just the Westminster bubble? Well, I have to say, against my own desires, as it were, it looks to me as though the story has had cut through and has provoked a fury in the country across all divides. I think it's very, very damaging to Boris. I think it's damaging to this Tory government. And it will survive because it's got an 80-seat majority, I know. And those Tory MPs who are sort of saying Cummings should resign are not going to vote for Christmas, that's for sure. So the government will survive.
OK, fully understand that, but you say Boris is damaged. Why does he need Dominic Cummings so much?
I think two main reasons, really. Cummings is a winner. He was the architect of Vote Leave. He got the hugely influential in getting the referendum result. And then since Boris got elected to leader of the Conservative Party and therefore Prime Minister, he has also been the architect of the general election, or was a major part of that general election campaign that won that huge majority and saw the way to do it was to say, get Brexit done. So he's been hugely, hugely successful for Boris. And Boris always won. If you look at the time he was in Mayor of London, and many of your listeners, of course, are from outside London, thank goodness, seeing day-to-day activity of him when he was mayor. But he always had in The Godfather, they used to call a consigliere, a right-hand man who steered him through. That's the way he is. Someone to shore up his own instincts. And Cummings is that man.
Is it also because perhaps he surrounded himself with a bunch of, not imbeciles, but not very astute political operators? We'll put the Chancellor to one side and come to him in a moment. But when Boris was ill, the stand-ins didn't look that good to me. What do you think?
I think there's distinctly an element of that. I think Boris is stuck between a rock and a hard place, because until the whole Brexit thing is finally resolved, i.e. December the 31st, he is stuck, really, with a cabinet in a Brexit image. And so there are all sorts of people who are perfectly good, perfectly talented people who are not in the cabinet because, frankly, they're fanatical Remainers. Once it becomes no issue, then that becomes different. Until we have left the EU in whatever way we have, I mean, the conclusion of the withdrawal next December the 31st, it's very difficult for him to recast a cabinet in which he brings in people who fundamentally disagree with its main raison d'etre.
Okay, fully understand that. So let's talk about Boris's own personal performance during the pandemic. Do you think he's done a good job? Did he put the lockdown in too late, too early? What's your view? How has he performed?
A friend of mine the other day was saying, the problem is, with a lot of the media, they're not seeing this. They're just seeing this as a political story. This situation, this pandemic, is not a political story. It is a war in as much as against any human foe. And the problem is, we know so little about this enemy and what it is going to do next. With hindsight, Winston Churchill would have wished he had more Spitfires when we went to war with Germany. I bet the Americans wish they hadn't kept their fleet in Pearl Harbor altogether like that. You know, hindsight's a very, very bad drug, very dangerous drug. So do I think he should have brought the lockdown in earlier? Well, some reports from what I'm reading now suggest, well, yes, he should. But did he know that at the time? It's all hindsight's just so dangerous. And you're seeing it being played out on a daily basis.
I agree that this report by Tim Spector, he says Cheltenham shouldn't have gone ahead. It was Jenny Harris and Boris in a video on the very day that WHO declared this. And I know there's questions around them as well. But on the very day that WHO declared this a pandemic, they said Cheltenham was OK. They said the Liverpool game was OK. And now Spector is saying that probably led to many more thousands, he said, deaths. And I know it's about hindsight, but he could have made different choices. He was bragging that he was shaking everybody's hands on coronavirus wards. It's not just about hindsight.
No, I was appalled by Cheltenham. I was absolutely appalled by Cheltenham. I thought it was madness. I could not begin to see why. Similarly, at the time, I thought the Liverpool game, I could not understand why that was going ahead. And yes, I think they were mistakes. But again, there are so many things that are literally hindsight in exactly what this virus was, what it would do. So, I mean, to this day, do we know whether children are more susceptible to it, less susceptible to it? Do they pass it on? Don't they pass it on? I do think there were some mistakes made, but I think piling on now and this gotcha culture, which is the media is obsessed with, of trying to trip up the government, is losing sight of. At the time, I remember very, very clearly the footage from Italy and Spain, bodies piled up, sick people piled up in hospital corridors, and the terror that that could happen here. And they concentrated on making sure that didn't happen here. And they won that. You know, the great applause for the Nightingale hospitals because of what they did, how they reacted. They avoided needing them. But that's now forgotten. And yes, of course, mistakes were made. Mistakes were made in the First World War. Mistakes were made in the Second World War. Mistakes are made in every war. And this is a war against a doubly vicious foe because we can't see him and don't know where he is.
OK, that leads me on to ask then, should we be doing the lockdown then? Let's just talk about those children. Children are meant to go back to school, or some children, next week. Do you think he's been a bit slow going into lockdown, which is what some of the criticism is, and now he's been a little bit quick out of it? Your views?
I've got grandchildren, preschool age, and my daughter is thinking of sending them back next Monday. And I don't have a problem with that. I think that you've got to start getting the world back together. I doubt she's someone you are particularly fan of, but Sarah Vine in the Daily Mail raised something the other day, which is a parallel to this, which is about the whole furlough scheme. People have got to start, if they are capable and it is possible, people have to start getting back to work. It is damaging children not to be at school. Their morale, their future educations, and all the signs are actually that they do not suffer badly and they do not transmit hugely. And there can be a way. But the education unions, politically based, refusal to even consider it, are not. We're just about the only place left in Europe that are not sending their children back to school. And I think it's a time we did.
Thanks for that. In the second half of the show, we will go on to the Chancellor. I do want to talk to you about the Emily Maitlis interview as well on Newsnight. Well, not the interview, the introduction. It was extraordinary. All coming up in the second half of Shooting from the Lip with me, John Gaunter. My special guest today, Mr. Neil Wallace. Don't dare go away.
Shooting from the Lip.
OK, welcome back to the second half of Shooting from the Lip with my guest today, Mr. Neil Wallace. Let's just go straight to that furlough scheme and whether you think that's been a success. What do you make of that? I mean, we've spent more money than even Jeremy Corbyn. And let's thank God he's not in charge. But then he wanted to spend, Neil. So what do you make of Rishi? Has he been the star of the pandemic?
I think without doubt he has. I go back to my analogy before the break of wartime situations bring extraordinary situations. And what he has had to do to keep the country afloat, I think, was decisive, was brilliant, had to be done, even though it will be against every instinct that the Tory party have got. And they have been absolutely unstinting in what they've been doing. Lots of the demands have been completely extraordinary, but he has stood up to the plate. So the issue now is, when you've got in London a city of 8 million people, you're only getting less. I think there was one day there was only 20 new cases. You're getting literally handfuls of cases a day. That city has, at the moment, got the pandemic under control. So it should be going back to work, and people there should not be being subsidised by you and I, and themselves, incidentally, because this is taxpayers' money. It's not some anonymous government. It is our money, taxpayers' money. I know a bloke who has basically built a house, quite literally, just up the road from here, he's been at it for a while, but he is effectively finishing off building a house, being furloughed. And he is desperate for the furlough not to be lifted because he wants to get it done before the end of the summer.
You can't blame him if he's been given the opportunity.
That's the point. Sarah Vine talks in her recent column, talked about three people she knows who run small businesses who say they're having a dreadful time getting their staff to come back to work because, frankly, they're having a really nice time in this wonderful weather, want to see out the summer, and quite, you know, they'll come back in the autumn.
Okay, Neil, I accept that. When you talk about, say, low-paid workers, people who work in pubs, my wife, for example, works in a theatre. She can't get back to work. She is desperate. She is furloughed. She is getting her 80%, but there's an awful lot of people out there. Let's not characterise all of the people as if they've just got their feet up in the bloody garden.
No, of course not, John. I mean, look, as you well know, I'm a big fan of the hospitality sector, particularly ones that serve tribute beer. But there are areas, like the guy I know is a shop fitter. I know another bloke who works assembling kitchens. And there is another bloke just down the road from here. His truck hasn't moved from outside his house ever since. And, you know, we need some work doing here. And trying to find someone simply to come out and service a boiler has proved impossible. There's no reason, in social distancing terms, we'll go in the other room while it takes you to do it. In fact, we'll sit in the garden because it's lovely.
Let's talk about that then. So how do we get people back to work? I mean, for example, you have to wear a mask on public transport. Now, Boris has been very libertarian about this. Would you like to see a clear directive? If you're in a shop, if you're on buses, if you want to get on a plane, you've got to wear a mask. Would that help?
Again, there's two answers to this. The first question is, they're actually, all the scientific evidence I have read, and I've read widely on this actually, is that they are very little use in either way, either to save yourself, in which case they are virtually no use whatsoever, or to save other people, in which they are of slight use. However, it's all about the court of public opinion, and the court of public opinion is that I think they want to see masks, in which case Boris, bite the blooming bullet and just go along with it.
Okay, so let's move from there. What about social distancing? More and more countries around the world, and I think even WHO now are recommending this, you don't have to be 2 metres apart, especially outside. It could be 1 metre. Now, if that happens, and there's calls this morning in the papers for this from the brewers, from the publicans, then that would make pubs be able to operate again, almost. So is the 2 metre rule wrong?
As we already have made clear, I'm a big fan of the hospitality industry and certainly want my local to reopen ASAP. The 2 metre rule was brought in and everybody understand it and it's totally clear, right? So if I go down to my corner shop, I quite literally this morning will see everybody standing 2 metres apart. They get that. Do you change a successful thing simply because other people are doing it differently? The 1 metre rule was brought in about 30 years ago in relation to flu. And the World Health Organization, the WHO that you keep referring to, adapted it then and have stuck by it ever since. Some people have used it, others haven't. I think that if you break a very easily understandable 2 metre rule, then I think you're asking for trouble. And is it worth it? I don't think they'll allow that to happen.
Okay, so how the hell are we going to get the pubs and the restaurants open again? Because I don't know about you, my local, you couldn't be 2 metres apart. There's not enough bloody room in there. And so traditional boozers will die, never open again? Your views?
I totally see that point and I understand that frustration. Your wife will tell you about the theatres. They simply cannot open while this continues. I think it's a question, and actually I slightly touched on it earlier. In London, you should basically lift the lockdown because it is clearly under control in the capital. However, you go up to Barons Furness and there's a complete spike up there. There's a problem in the northeast, and in those places they must do whatever they have to do until they're in as much control as they are down here. in London.
Well, let me just challenge you on that, because that's what Matt Hancock is now talking about. In the press conference, he's talked about regional variations. But when you say lift the lockdown in London, do you mean lift the lockdown so we can both go for a drink down the West End?
I think I probably do, actually, John.
Do you open the theatres in the West End?
I think if you're going to do it, you're going to do it. I think Boris is probably right that talking about baby steps. But for instance, I don't know whether your local has got a pub garden. I can see no reason. A pub near me here has got a lovely big garden. I can see no reason why people shouldn't go out there, can keep up the 2 metre rule. I've spoken to the landlady about this because she's doing food takeaways, and she would happily put them in gloves, and she would do table service, and she could get opening again that way. She's champing at the bit to do that. And I think there's lots of places that can do that around the country. You know, not everywhere is London, of course. But the truth is, in London, there is no question, despite the fact that people have been back on the tube for several weeks now, that there is no evidence of any kind of spike.
OK. What about airline travel? Michael O'Leary said the 14-day quarantine from Ryanair was ludicrous. He just said you can't get into an airport unless you're wearing a mask. Because we've got to get the airline industry going, and we've got to get the package holiday thing going. I mean, Spain's already saying we'll open up Benidorm again, I think, in mid-July. So is that the way forward there with the airports?
Well, hopefully, yes. I mean, the worrying thing, John, is that makes me hesitant is that the number of fresh cases is not coming down as quickly as I thought it would. I mean, it is coming down very quickly, but not as quickly as I thought. You're still getting 2,000 cases a day nationally. Now, many of those are in specific areas, you know, like, sadly, the northeast part of the country that I love. And down in Cornwall, where I'm talking to you from, that there is very few cases. Over in, as I mentioned earlier, Barrow in Furness, there is a big problem. So,
OK, understand that. Let's just move on to the broadcast media. There was an extraordinary thing about Emily Maitlis when she introduced the item last night on Dominic Cummings. What was your objection to it?
She didn't introduce an item. She made a speech. She basically told her audience her view, and it wasn't a very complimentary one, of Dominic Cummings, of Boris Johnson, of this government. She absolutely trashed them all. Well, as far as I'm aware, it's illegal under Ofcom rules, that's the regulator, for BBC to be biased one way or the other. That last night was a complete bias polemic and was outrageous. And I'm a BBC licence payer. There are millions of us out there. I don't remember us paying for that, and I thought it was symbolic of what has happened in the last few months, and probably longer, actually, starting under Brexit. But I just think it is completely out of order and wrong. The BBC is the national TV station. It's the national news provider, and it should be straight and unbiased, and too often it hasn't been. And the apotheosis of that, the very perfect example of its bias, was Emily Maitlis on Newsnight last night.
OK, just wrong. Got to finish in 60 seconds, so tell me, what's the new normal going to look like? And are we ever going to get back to the old normal? Because, do you know what? Warts and all, I rather enjoyed it.
Yeah. Yes, but that's part of the problem, John. We need to get back to the old normal of everybody going back to work, earning money, building roads, building bridges. Boris did not intend to be a prime minister in a war or a pandemic. And this, he needs to be able to get back on track to do what he was intended to do, to complete Brexit and get this country going again. And the British public have been brilliant. And sadly, I don't think they've been well served by their media, but the British public as a whole have been sensational.
Thanks very much indeed. They're the views of Neil. What do you make of that? Neil Wallace, former Fleet Street editor and now social commentator. I'll be back next week with another person who will be just as forthright as Neil. And in the meantime, stay safe, wash your hands, and we'll be back next week. You've been listening to John Gaunt's Shooting from the Lip.
Shooting from the Lip.
If you've got a view, I want to hear it. If you agree, I want to hear it. If you disagree, get in touch. Tell me why I'm wrong, but you better have a good argument.
This is Shooting from the Lip.